Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We have about individuals who may support terrorism being in the United States run from concerns about providing financing to terrorists, radicalizing others.
I'm not very interested in transferring detainees from Gitmo to North Dakota. I'm sure many of my colleagues feel the same way, but first let's see what kind of a plan this president proposes, and then we'll move forward.
I don't think the American people will stand for bringing a bunch of detainees for prosecution over here, and it's in many ways that simple.
Savage.
Now mark this day down, because today begins the first of many stunning defeats for the increasingly dictatorial Chairman Obama. This was a stunning defeat for Chairman O, in that his own party turned on him, because men with greater sense than he has, men with constituents with greater sense than MoveOn.KillUs, understand that releasing radical Islamists into American neighborhoods is a bad idea. You may not understand what happened today, but I'm going to explain it to you. The Democrat Party itself moved against Chairman Obama. Now remember, Chairman Obama, by a single stroke of his pen, through an executive order, said he would close Guantanamo Bay and release the prisoners to he didn't know where. Nobody on earth wants to take these dangerous Islamic radicals. Nobody wants them. Nobody, Egypt. Nobody wants them. What happened today is stunning, not because it passed, but by the majority of 90-6. 90-6. Now, we have the names, the name and shame. We're going to name and shame those in the Democrat Party who said it's excellent to put them in my backyard. We're going to name and shame those who said it is okay to put dangerous Islamic radicals in my backyard because I don't care about my constituents. And I hope that their voters will understand how dangerous these senators are who didn't care what you said. 90-6, we're going to give you the name and shame list of those six who say it's okay for the radical Islamists to be walking the streets of their neighborhoods. This is a huge slap in the face to Chairman Obama, and by the way, it's long overdue, because the man is frankly out of control, nationalizing Wall Street, nationalizing Detroit, nationalizing one industry after another. This is a shocking thing that's going on in the country, and what's more shocking is that he was defeated today on the detainees, even, and this is very unusual, even the FBI director, Robert Mueller, came out against him. Mueller came out against him and said this is a bad idea. It's a shocker. Now, the six Democrats who will be named and shamed right now, who said it is okay to have evil, dangerous, radical Islamists walking our streets, including Carl Levin, the moron of Michigan, a man who is possibly one of the most ignorant men in the history of the Senate. And by the way, he's the chairman of the Armed Services Committee. I can tell you, looking at Carl Levin, this man has never fired a Daisy BB gun. This man has probably never fished for a trout. Yet Carl Levin sits on the Armed Services Committee. He said, oh, yeah, we want him in our neighborhood. Jack Reed of Rhode Island, a former Army Ranger, Jack Reed of Rhode Island said, yes, we want radical Islamists in Rhode Island. Patrick Leahy, you know who he is. You know how slimy he is. You know how evil Patrick Leahy can be. Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, said, we want Islamic terrorists in Vermont. The good liberals of Vermont want them in Little Red Barns. 90-6, only three abstained. Two of them were sick. That would be Byrd and Kennedy, and I don't know who the 100th one was. I don't have his name. It's irrelevant. But he didn't vote. This move by Senate Democrats to bar for now any transfer of I notice they're calling them detainees. This is a very important story. Nobody will call them like it, say it like it is. What do you mean detainees? What, were they detained or drunk driving? Do you see what's going on in your country, the news speak? They won't even say Islamic terrorist. They won't say radical Islamists. They're calling them detainees, as though they were held for passing a red light, or let us say, driving under the influence. You wouldn't know what they're there for. It's unbelievable to me. It's astounding to me what's going on in the country, but it's not astounding if you read George Orwell's writings over the years. Now, George Orwell wrote 1984. Most people who have a high school education in America might know that book, 1984, where he predicted a horrible, dangerous future where the government ran everything. He wrote it well before 1984. But he created in his book, 1984, a fictional language called Newspeak. And he described it as the only language in the world whose vocabulary gets smaller every year. Sounds sort of like rap music. You know, the newspeak that Orwell talks about removes all shades of meaning from language, leaving simple dichotomies such as pleasure and pain, happiness and sadness, good think and crime think. It sounds more or less like John McCain's daughter's speeches. Now, the object of newspeak was to reinforce the total dominance of the state. Those of you who are not literate can't follow the rest. I suggest you turn on National Public Radio, where they've been using newspeak for a number of years. But in Orwell's description of newspeak, root words served as both nouns and verbs. This is very complicated. If you're a rap music lover, please tune out right now. Root words served as both nouns and verbs, which allowed further reduction in the total number of words. For example, think served as both noun and verb, so the word thought was not required and could be abolished. They wanted to get rid of the word thought. And here's the critical part. In newspeak, a staccato rhythm of short syllables was also a goal. Rap music, in other words. Why did they want a staccato rhythm of short syllables in the future, according to Orwell? Because that further reduced the need for deep thinking about language. Successful newspeak meant that there would be fewer and fewer words. Dictionaries would get thinner and thinner. In addition, words with opposite meanings were removed as redundant, so bad became ungood. Now, what was the purpose of newspeak? It was to eliminate the idea of thinking itself. Now, remember when he wrote this before text messaging. He wrote this before the internet. He wrote and predicted all of this before the age that we are living in. He said by 2050, earlier probably, all real knowledge of old speak will have disappeared. The whole literature of the past will have been destroyed. Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, Byron, they'll all exist only in newspeak versions, not merely changed into something different, but actually contradictory of what they used to be. And so he said, slogans such as freedom is slavery will not even exist because the concept of freedom will have been abolished. The whole climate of thought will be different. In fact, there will be no thought as we understand it now. He predicted, orthodoxy means not thinking, not needing to think. Orthodoxy is unconsciousness, 1984 by George Orwell. Now, that's something that should be sent to England to Jackie Smith. Jackie Smith. Another big story is Iran. Do we have the Obama soundbite where he says that we need diplomacy? Play it if we have it. I want that soundbite. Why don't you have it right now? I told you this morning to get it for right now. I told you five times, get it for right now. Obama said the other day that we need diplomacy with Iran because we haven't had any, which is a total lie. We've had nothing but diplomacy with the Hitler of Iran, okay? But Obama lied again in newspeak and said the reason we need diplomacy with Iran is because we haven't had any. And what he got in response was a slap in the face from the Hitler of Iran when Iran fired a surface-to-surface missile right after Obama said there should be more talks with Iran. And that is because, whatever you may say about Ahmadinejad, he understands who Obama is, the new Neville Chamberlain. And I raise a question to you. Should Netanyahu attack Iran even if Chairman O doesn't give him permission to do so? Should America negotiate and send more diplomats to the Hitler of Iran? Or should we use military action against Iran while we still can? Remember what we are talking about, for those of you who didn't read the whole story today. Iran has fired, about a day after Obama said we want more diplomacy, showing himself to be the Neville Chamberlain of our times. And by the way, Neville Chamberlain wasn't an evil man. I'm not calling Obama evil. He is naive. He is a naive man. He is a naive professor who doesn't quite understand the world he is living in, because all of his life he has been given everything he ever wanted. He's intelligent for sure. That doesn't mean that he's clever. Intelligence doesn't mean that he understands the world. He understood how to use people to get where he is, but he certainly doesn't understand world politics well enough. He gets up and says, we need more diplomacy with Iran because we haven't had any, which is a lie. The next day, Iran test fires a missile with a 1,200-mile range. It is a solid fuel rocket. What does that mean to you? It means that the missile can strike American bases in the Persian Gulf. It can strike southern Europe, including Greece. It can strike Israel. It could carry a nuclear warhead. Very, very serious. First successful test of a solid fuel missile. Why is that important? Because a solid fuel missile is much more mobile and easy to hide than their current generation of out-of-date liquid fuel rockets. Until now, Iran's longest-range missile has been the liquid fuel Shahab 3, which is based on the design that Iran obtained from the Hitler of North Korea. So here we go now. The day after Neville Chamberlain Obama says we need more diplomacy, the Hitler of Iran says, sure, keep negotiating. Here's a rocket in your pocket. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about the fact that Obama received a stunning defeat today, a real slap in the face from his own party, with a vote of 90-6. And the fact of the matter is, this is a huge defeat for Obama. In that, he made a campaign promise to close Guantanamo, saying they were mistreated. I guess they didn't get enough ethnic meals and sufficient numbers of threads in their prayer rugs. Perhaps the thread count of the prayer rugs were a violation of some code in Geneva. I don't really know what it is that he wanted to close it for, but nobody wanted to take these detainees, so to speak, these radical Islamic terrorists in their neighborhood. No country wants them. Egypt doesn't want them. Nobody wants them. The only person who wants them is the head of the ACLU, apparently wants them in his backyard. 90-6 is a huge defeat. Now, this is after an executive order. So now Obama says the other day that we need to have diplomacy with Iran to stop them from developing a nuclear weapon. And the next day they launch a new missile, solid fuel rocket, 1,200 miles, can reach southern Europe, reach our troops in the Persian Gulf. And that's an answer to Neville Chamberlain, the Neville Chamberlain within. Obama's channeling Neville Chamberlain. If you want to comment on any of these topics, you can do so at 1-800-449-8255. KNEW, San Francisco, Jerome, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yep. Dr. Savage, you like to claim that you're an educated man and all, and I'll give you that, but you seem pretty ignorant of the history of Iran. They haven't invaded anyone since the ancient Persian Empire.
Sir, does that mean that the 90 senators who voted against closing Guantanamo are also ignoramuses?
Guantanamo has nothing to do with Iran. I'm talking about the United States.
Oh, so you're in favor of the closing of Guantanamo? I just need to know where you're coming from in toto.
Where I'm coming from is that the United States backed the CIA's coup, deposing Mossadegh in 1953.
Why are you in favor of Ahmadinejad? Explain that to me when he said he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the planet. That means you agree with him, correct?
I haven't heard him say that. I've heard you say
it. Well, you haven't heard him say it. Doesn't mean he didn't say it. He said it many times. He even said it the other day that they're going to wipe Israel off the map, Jerome. But apparently that didn't make it to San Francisco, where newspeak reigns supreme.
Yeah, if you look at it...
Why are you on the side of a Hitler state like Iran? Explain it to me.
Why were we on the side of Saddam Hussein when he attacked Iran?
Well, wait, let's not go back to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein is dead and so are his sons. Let's deal with a current Hitler, Ahmadinejad, who has said he will wipe Israel off the map. He has said so numerous times. Do I have to find the soundbite for you, Jerome? Would you then listen to it?
Yes, I
would. Would you then say it doesn't matter anyway? Because you hate Jews and you'd like them all killed. Is that what you're really getting at, Jerome? You hate Israel and you hate Jews?
The Jews are not the problem. The Zionists are the problem.
Oh, I see. Well, what do you think about Martin Luther King Jr. saying that, make no mistake about it, anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism. Are you going to deny that Martin Luther King Jr. said that as well?
I've never heard that.
Well, you never heard a lot of things because you live inside your own world. You live in a world controlled by newspeak from the local media. You don't hear a lot of things. You live in your own world. But even the Democrats are hearing the people. No, let's talk about the closing of Guantanamo. Do you think they should have been released into America?
I think Guantanamo has been a rallying cry for jihadi terrorists around the world.
No, that's not the question. Do you think we should close Guantanamo and bring the terrorists to America?
I think we should close Guantanamo and bring they aren't terrorists, they are detainees, and they should be given a day in court in U.S. courts. Yes, I do.
Well, you're a Nazi. You are an absolute fascist. Don't you understand you're your worst enemy? Don't you understand that you have become the very thing you feared all your life? That the very people you have sympathy for would throw you down a sewer. They hate you. They hate people like you, Jerome. Don't you get it?
I'm a Nazi.
Don't you understand how blind you have become to the danger of your own mind? You're on the side of the people who would kill you. How could that be? How could you go against 90 U.S. senators and the FBI director? Your own party, the Democrats, have said don't close it down because nobody wants them and they're dangerous. How could you not see this?
Democrat Party, I'm a Green.
I didn't hear what you just said, Jerome. Please repeat it.
I am not a Democrat. I'm a member of the Green Party.
So you're even worse. You're even further to the left than the zanies in the Democrat Party. You're out of the ken of reality altogether. What does the Green Party mean? What do you stand for? Tell me what you stand for.
We stand for social justice.
Economic. What does that mean? What does social justice mean, Jerome? Explain it to me. That's just a set of words out of newspeak. What does that mean?
What that means is that we are opposed to a system in which labor is exploited systematically by capitalism.
What does that mean? What do you mean labor is exploited? What does that mean? Tell me what that means. This is all rhetoric, rhetorical pap that you're throwing around. Tell me about the four cops that were shot in Oakland by the subhuman. Whose side were you on, the subhuman or the four cops?
Subhuman, that's an awfully racist phrase. No wonder you've been banned.
What do you mean racist phrase? You mean the cops who were killed? That wasn't a racist act? You're the racist, you pig, you!
Savage.
By the way, many of you are asking by email and messages to various sites what is going on with my claim against the British government, which is in violation of European law. They're in violation of European Union laws. They're in violation of many, many different laws that they are signatories to. Irrespective of whether they like what I have to say, they've done an illegal act here. My attorneys in London have filed a letter of defamation, a defamation complaint. The British government has, I think, 7 to 10 days to respond. We are waiting for the response, and I will let you know what it is when it happens. That's all. Now, who is the woman who has lumped me in with murderers, who has lumped me in with the actual murderers? Who is it? Her name is Jackie Smith. And I had a letter from England, and I'm going to read you a piece of it right now. Like most socialist women, men of the same ilk are far worse. Jackie Smith is of such low common account as to make her difficult to designate as a worthwhile enemy. She is a faceless bureaucrat, straight out of Kafka's minor ultra minor league. Long ago we had in Britain creatures far worse. This was the Rosa Klebb Commissar variety. See Ian Fleming's From Russia with Love. They are all built like the proverbial brick house, and the slab-faced Claire Short is perhaps the last one of such. No wonder their mutilated and abused husbands are driven to either suicide, fraud, madness, or pornography, he writes. Jackie Smith could just about manage a squad of school dinner ladies, may God bless them all. A telephone answering machine would make a better government minister. These creatures come up through any and every kind of worthy committee and local debating society. Like the beloved social workers, they have little or no education, and their mental level is just about zero. Overpromoted, they are just about capable of discussing the state of the roads, the height of hedgerows, and the price of clothing pegs. Their heavily communized social democratic brains are stuffed with little more than straw. The absence of almost all intellectual opposition in this case is most suspicious and peculiar. Thus do we see our children corrupted with little opposition in England. How have we been made to tolerate the situation? through hermaphroditic media in the main, but that's a story for another time. That's that he writes this, and he ends with, if this is the face of the so-called proletarian revolution, then we have a battle on our hands worse than terrorism, writes Colin Bennett from England, as one of the short one. Jackie Smith seems an icon of the New Britain, no longer worth a capital in front of its name. She is ignorant and aggressively politically correct. At the same time as new minorities, brimful of well-earned historical hate toward their new motherland, threaten the cohesion of the British identity, at the same time as the extremist global warming agenda has taken over and cameras watch over everywhere, Churchill would be twirling in his grave, not just rolling over. Name withheld. So don't assume everyone in England is happy with the radical socialist Labour government. And I want to remind you that yesterday, for the first time in 300 years, a corrupt left-winger was forced out of Parliament. The Speaker of the House of Commons was forced to resign. This is the first time in 300 years. So the Labour or socialist government, it's called Labour, but it's socialist, is very much like that caller who identified himself as a Green. They are ignorant, they are uneducated, and they're extremely corrupt. And the British people may be able to save themselves, finally. The only question is what the Conservatives will do when they are ushered back in. Will they be the party of Margaret Thatcher, or will they be the party of George Bush? My suspicion is they will become the party of John McCain. That is what I think you're going to see. Very little conservatism coming in England, but we'll see. Houston, Texas, Joseph, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Michael Savage again. Mr. Savage, you have definitely nailed it on the head, and you said it months ago. You said that the Democratic Party would not tolerate this clown, and you've done it again. You're just impressed those of us.
Well, but today is you know, it's not a, he's only been president for a few months, and the man has been acting like a dictator. One executive order after another, one speech after another, one major emotion after another, one agenda item after another, every day another big speech with another big voice and another big show where the people don't know what he's talking about anymore. But the fact of the matter is, this was a big one. This was a big one. It was 90-6. Your local papers won't report that. That even the Democrats turned on Obama on this one. And that was because the people said resoundingly, no, we don't want Islamic terrorists in our backyard.
Like your father, I've got dirty hands on a steering wheel. I've been working hard all day as an electrical contractor, and I want you to know that there are people that maybe don't get a chance to call in every day because we're working hard. But I'll tell you what, we listen to you, and we support you with our
good
dollars.
I agree. I like that. I know that. The working man loves me. That's what's important. I really don't care about the effete snobs. They were never worth anything. They were never worth anything, and they never will be worth anything. Now, we had a caller, two callers ago, who said that Ahmadinejad never said he's going to wipe out Israel. He was lying because he's a member of the far-left Green Party, and that was built on lies. They're marginal, and they're suicidal. We understand that. They're a danger to themselves and everyone around them. Here in front of you is from the CNN website. Iranian leader says wipe out Israel. Posted October 27th, 2005, Tehran, Iran. Iran's new president has repeated a remark from a former Ayatollah that Israel should, quote, be wiped out from the map, close quote, insisting that a new series of attacks will destroy the Jewish state and lashing out at Muslim countries and leaders that acknowledge Israel. Ahmadinejad quoted a remark from Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of Iran's Islamic Revolution, who said that Israel, quote, must be wiped out from the map of the world, close quote. Now I'll go on for those of you who don't give a rat's behind about Israel. The president then went on and said, quote, and God willing, with the force of God behind it, we shall soon experience a world without the United States and Zionism, close quote. So I rest my case. You understand that the far left is anti-Semitic. The far left, although there are Jews in it, are self-hating Jews, and they cloud their self-hatred in the phrase that I'm anti-Zionist, not anti-Semitic. When Martin Luther King Jr. himself very clearly said, make no mistake about it, anyone who says that they're anti-Zionist is really anti-Semitic. Martin Luther King Jr. said that. You know, you're lucky that you have Michael Savage, who is so well-read and so knowledgeable, on the radio. You're very lucky that you have me. I'm a national treasure in the United States of America. Whether I'll be recognized doesn't matter to me at all. All that matters is that you listen to the show. I am a national treasure. I'm the only one who has the breadth of knowledge necessary for these times. Oh, anyone can get up and say Democrats bad, Republicans good. There's a man with golf clubs who specialized that in years. P.T. Barnum explained he'd be coming along a long time ago. This way to the egress. That's fine. I don't care. There's room for everybody. But make no mistake about it. He doesn't have the breadth of knowledge to deal with the times we are in. So here we are. 1-800-449-8255. The Democrats fire a warning shot at Obama. Iran fires back at Obama. A stunning defeat for this increasingly dictatorial chairman, Obama. No question about it. Again, I talked about newspeak, if you want something new. Newspeak, where they're using words like detainees to describe radical Islamic terrorists from Guantanamo. They're now using a new word, detainees. Detainees. Now, what should we call the 19 men who flew the planes into the World Trade Center? I realize it doesn't mean anything to members of the Green Party, World Trade Center. What does that mean? Shall we call them disgruntled airline passengers from the Middle East? What were they flying the planes into the World Trade Center for? Where were they from? Ireland? England? Germany? No, they were all Muslim. They were all Muslim. If I remember correctly, almost all of them were Saudi Arabian. What would you call them? Would you call them disgruntled airline passengers? The same way you're calling these people in Guantanamo detainees? Are you people insane? Yes, liberalism is a mental disorder, which is why the liberals are picking on me, because they know that I've diagnosed them correctly. Ignorant to a man. Now, the biggest schmuck is the British ambassador to the United States, who went on national public radio today and attacked me, a so-called Sir Nigel Sheinwald. Let's listen to this snotty eunuch. Clip
the
one.
The list, which was released the other week by our Home Office, had about 20 people on it for the last year. So you're talking about 20 out of 30-odd million. That's a very, very small number. And they're a mixture of people. I mean, they're people who are who have a background in religious extremism, others who have expressed extreme views in other ways. And I'm sorry to say that some of the things which Mr. Savage has said and which are on the record were, in the view of our government, likely to inflame and to cause hatred and possibly violence. And it's just
listen,
not
you
worth...
snotty eunuch. Shut your mouth, you snotty eunuch. I don't care if you call yourself a British ambassador. You're lower than a slug. You snotty eunuch, you. You are the one who is actually doing the very thing you said I'm doing. You have painted a target on my back, you snotty eunuch. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Sir Nigel Sheinwald. I'm liable to bring 10,000 people outside the British Embassy in San Francisco, and I will be waving signs in your face. I will get a permit if you keep up this attack upon me. If you keep up this big lie out of the Soviet Union, Nigel Sheinwald, I'll have 10,000 people outside your embassy. I warn you, Sheinwald, you're a liar, and you are committing further damage to your government. You're committing further damage to your government, and you're attacking me in a manner that is absolutely wrong. You put me in a list with murderers, you snotty eunuch, you. I don't care about your snotty accent from England. It means nothing to me. You said people on the list have backgrounds in religious extremism and extreme views? Listen, you snotty eunuch, you. You have people on that list who are in prison for 10 years for killing people. You liar, you. You snotty liar, you. How dare you slander me like this? But you see, you can only get away with it on government-controlled national public radio in America. Oh, do you, Nigel Sheinwald? I invite Nigel Sheinwald, sir or no sir, to speak to Michael Savage. And that's Dr. Michael Savage to you, Sir Sheinwald. You are painting a target on my back with your big lie. And I mark my words, Sheinwald, you keep up this attack on me and these big lies, I will have 10,000 people outside your embassy. And the world will see who you are. I will expose you for who you are. I will expose your government for who it is. I will expose Jackie Smith for the little sub-moron that she is. You are in violation of European Union law, Sir Sheinwald. Your government is in violation of European Union law, Sheinwald. I don't care what kind of snotty accent you put on your syllables. You're a low slug, in my opinion. You're a lowlife. It's men like you who destroyed your country in the past. It's men like you who have led your country over the abyss. It is men like you who will destroy your own nation with your big lie, Scheinwald. And if you don't like what I'm saying, come on my show like a man and debate me, instead of going on some slimy little guy's show on National Public Radio who no one listens to. Scheinwald, how'd you get your sirship, Scheinwald? What did you do to get it? Who'd you pay off to become a sir, Scheinwald? Who'd you smear in England? Which low-life Labour Party member did you pay off to become a sir? You think I'm impressed with your accent? Your accent is the accent of a decadent society. Your accent is the accent of a failed society. Your accent is the accent of a eunuch himself, Sir Scheinwald. Now I'm going to repeat again. My attorneys have investigated European law. The British Home Secretary is in violation of European Union law, plain and simple. And we have filed a letter of demand with the biggest law firm in England. Make no mistake about it, this is a very real case and a very serious error on the part of Jackie Smith. But for the British ambassador to the United States to go on national public radio owned by the Democrats and attack me without ever having talked to me is a further example of the Sovietization of this once great nation called Britain. I'll be right back.
The list, which was released the other week by our Home Office, had about 20 people on it for the last year. So you're talking about 20 out of 30 odd million. That's
right. This man, so-called Sir Nigel Scheinwald, is the British ambassador to the U.S., who is continuing the smear campaign, the McCarthy-esque smear campaign against Michael Savage today on a government-owned station in America called NPR, run by the Democrat Party. And Sir Nigel Elton Scheinwald, the current British ambassador to the United States, was educated at Harrow County School for Boys and at Balliol College, Oxford, where apparently he spent his days learning nothing. He learned nothing about the Magna Carta. He learned nothing about due process. He learned nothing about free speech. But apparently he learned how to impress himself and his parents with a snotty, eunuch-like accent. You see, he was Foreign Office press secretary and head of news department from 1995 to 98. That means he was an expert in lying. That means he was an expert in dissimulating the truth. That means he was an expert in newspeak, which is why he has been bumped up to the San Francisco office. British ambassador to the U.S., sorry, he must be in New York. That's where he must be. Well, Sir Nigel, if you're listening to this show right now to see what I'm going to say about you next, I want you to pay very close attention because you are in very deep hot water. You keep this up, I'll name you in a lawsuit, and I will sue you personally for everything you're worth, including all the money you inherited from your parents. I don't imagine you've earned any yourself. I can't imagine a man like you could have ever built a business. I can't imagine you ever could have built a business on your own. A man like you would have had to inherit the money that you were living on. But let's put that aside, Sir Scheinwald, and I want you to listen to this. This was sent by my lawyers at the Thomas More Law Center. And you better pay very close attention, Sir Scheinwald. I respectfully request that you take all necessary action to protect Mr. Savage's rights under Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which both the United States and the UK are signatories. Mr. Scheinwald, I don't know if you learned this at Balliol, but Article 19, Section 2 provides this, Sir Scheinwald. Everyone shall have the right to freedom of expression. This right shall include freedom to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas of all kinds, regardless of frontiers. That means borders, I think, in your language, either orally, in writing, or in print, close quote. And Mr. Nigel Scheinwald, British ambassador to the U.S., pay very close attention. I don't know whether you learned this while playing with the other boys at the Harrow County School, but you see, your teachers at the Harrow County School for Boys should have told you that the United Kingdom is in direct violation of Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights, something I'm sure you're very interested in, human rights. That's something all of you Brits are very interested in, human rights. But you see, Article 10 protects the right to freedom of expression. And Article 10.1 provides in part, quote, everyone has the right of freedom of expression. This right shall include freedom to hold opinions and to receive and impart information and ideas without interference by public authority and regardless of frontiers, close quote. And Mr. Scheinwald, Mr. British ambassador, I want to remind you of something else, Mr. Scheinwald. This is case law, something you wouldn't have learned as a press officer, something you wouldn't have learned while dissimulating reality and truth, Mr. Scheinwald. The European Court of Human Rights case of Surek versus Turkey number 1 has held that the, quote, freedom of expression constitutes one to the essential foundations of a democratic society, close quote. The court went on to say that this freedom of expression is not only applicable to information and ideas that are favorably received, Sir Scheinwald, but, quote, also to those that offend, shock, or disturb. Now, this is something that would have been taught at Balliol in your father's day. In the day of Winston Churchill, perhaps, they would have been teaching this at Balliol. But by the time men of your low caliber were admitted to Balliol, they were no longer teaching what democracy was, were they? They were teaching you how to submit. They were teaching you how to become supine. They were teaching you how to become compliant and polite little schoolboys, weren't they? Well, you picked on the wrong subject here, Scheinwald. I may not have your background. Mine is 10 times better than yours. I may not have the education you have. Mine is 50 times better than yours. I have a real PhD from the University of California at Berkeley, Scheinwald. Have your groupies look it up. I've written 25 books, Scheinwald. And moreover, I never applied to go to your country. This was a made-up story by your government to cover up its real desires, which was to ban murderers and Muslim extremists. Scheinwald, watch your
Savage.
Tongue. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Was released the other week by our Home Office, had about 20 people on it for the last year. So you're talking about 20 out of 30 odd million. That's a very, very small number. And they're a mixture of people. I mean, they're people who are who have a background in religious extremism, others who have expressed extreme views in other ways. And I'm sorry to say that some of the things which Mr. Savage has said and which are on the record were, in the view of our government, likely to inflame and to cause hatred and possibly violence. And it's just not worth taking the risk to do that.
Now, this is a man named Scheinwald, who is apparently the British ambassador to the U.S., who has smeared me today on National Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm having my lawyers send him an immediate letter demanding an apology and retraction, or I will sue him personally for what he has just said. He is continuing the big lie. First of all, he said that they have banned people who have backgrounds in religious extremism. He means Muslim extremists, but he won't say it. And he says they have extreme views on other things. No, sir, you snotty eunuch. The people on your list included murderers who are in prison in the Soviet Union. The people on your list include Hamas murderers who smashed in a 4-year-old Jewish girl's head with a rifle butt. And you lump me in with them, Scheinwald, and you're continuing the smear campaign. Your list is a blacklist. Your list is a McCarthy list. Your list does not belong in a democratic society. Moreover, you are going on the basis of words that were sent to you, taken out of context by my enemies. Shame on you, Sheinwald. I would have thought you would have learned more at the Harrow County School for Boys and at Balliol College, Oxford. Now, in reading about the history of this Sheinwald, I'm reading something to you right from his entry in Wikipedia. Sir Nigel is credited with successfully negotiating the release of 15 Royal Navy personnel from Iran in 07. He made a critical breakthrough in the standoff during a call with the head of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Larijani. Now, if you remember that embarrassing moment in the embarrassing moment of history for the Royal Navy, sailors were kidnapped without firing a shot. The British Navy did not defend itself. A group of ragtag Iranian sailors boarded a British ship and kidnapped these defenseless children and took them to Iran. The defenseless socialist government of Britain did not fire a shot. The defenseless British government had to watch one of their soldiers crying on television, one of their sailors. The defenseless British government instead sent Sheinwald over there to beg for their release. That's apparently something that he's good at doing with dictators, which is begging. So Sheinwald, you pick on people that you think can't fight back, don't you? And you are supine to those who you are afraid of. Well, you picked on the wrong person today, Sheinwald. You have slandered me, or in your country, we would say you have libeled me. You have said that my words were likely to inflame and cause hatred and possibly violence. You have lied about me, Sheinwald, knowingly in my own country. You have now taken it from Britain, and you've brought it to my country. I am going to sue you. Unless you retract those words, unless you apologize to me, I'm going to sue you personally, Sheinwald. You are going to learn that you can't get away with it, even though you may think you have a perfect accent and that you are impeccably dressed. You may be impeccably dressed, Sheinwald, but you're not 100% correct. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. This is Michael Savage. Let's go to the callers and see what you think about this snotty eunuch. Abraham in Carl Springs, Florida. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. As an English citizen, I want to tell you that I've lived in the States now for 9 years, and I'm disgusted with the English government. It is disgusting what they're doing to you, and you should go get them.
We just sent this soundbite that I played on my show of Sheinwald to my attorney, and we've attached an MP3 of his actual statement. And it's saying, I want to take action against him since he made these statements in the United States, not in the United Kingdom. He has smeared me in a McCarthy-esque fashion. Would you not agree with that?
Absolutely, Michael. I'll tell you the truth. You know what? They would let Ahmadinejad in there in a second to speak in all the universities and all the governments, and he's the biggest terrorist of them all, and they're vilifying you. It's a disgrace.
Thank you, Abraham. I appreciate it. I understand that. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. All these articles that I've been talking about, including this one, they're on michaelsavage.com. Washington, D.C., WTNT. Alfred, welcome. Thank you for being on the show.
Dr. Savage, listen, you are fantastic. I definitely wouldn't worry about anything Lady Sheinwald has to say about you.
Well, it's worrisome because he's continuing to smear me. He's taking the smear that was started by this Jackie Smith, and he is now bringing it to America in my own country. I will not stand for it here.
And you shouldn't stand for it. I'm a lawyer, by the way, and I think your legal arguments are right on the money. I'm not an expert in EU law, but I think you're making some great points. But the real reason
my views – listen to what he said. He lied about a number of things in this small 40-second soundbite. He said people on the list – he means the blacklist – have backgrounds in religious extremism, but he doesn't say Muslim extremism, does he? And then he says, wait, extreme views on other things. No, there are murderers on the list who are imprisoned for killing immigrants in Russia. There are Hamas operatives who killed a Jewish family and smashed in a 4-year-old Jewish girl's head with a rifle butt. That's not an extreme view, is it, Alfred?
No, it's definitely not.
Is that an extreme view or an extreme action?
It's an extreme action, and you couldn't have...
Correct. It's called terrorism to anyone except to Nigel Sheinwald. So now he says the things that he heard me say, which, by the way, are taken out of context. You'd expect more from such a brilliant guy like him, wouldn't you? Were likely to cause violence. That's a continuation of the smear campaign begun by his government in England, his collapsing, corrupt Labour Party. His collapsing, corrupt Labour Party. Scheinwald, you will soon be thrown out of office, and you will have to live with the lawsuit that I'm going to lay on your doorstep. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449. You know, they're all going to be thrown out of office very soon. The Speaker of the House of Commons resigned, first one in 300 years, because of the level of corruption in England. Very soon, all of them will be thrown out of office. Very soon, I will have my day in court. Very soon, I will be able to defend myself. Right now, I'm defending myself in my own country on my own show. Very soon, I will defend myself in England through my attorneys. But I will not tolerate this big lie, this smear campaign, this blacklisting, this McCarthy-esque activity to go on in my country. I will use everything in my power, everything in my legal power, everything in the court of public opinion to defend myself. And I will do so. And if he doesn't apologize immediately, I will sue him. I will sue him for libeling me on National Public Radio today. It's the only power I have. I don't have a government behind me. He has a government to hide behind. He has the Home Office to hide behind. I have only the court of public opinion and the courts to use. San Diego, Chris, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I just want to let you know, I just started tuning into you a few months ago, and I love your show, and I can't believe that this is happening. This is outrageous. I can't wait till you get to the bottom of it.
Well, we're going to find out who in the U.S. government took those sound bites, cut them up the way they were cut up, and sent them to this woman in the Home Office, and why they have never once contacted me and said, we are British people. We believe in democracy. We believe in fairness. Did you actually say these things? What was the context in which you said them? When were they said? Do you actually mean this? Or do we have it wrong? Wouldn't that be fair?
Yeah, that's
thank you. This is something out of the ex-Soviet Union. This is something the KGB would have done to a person. Oh, boy, here we are, and I'm the one who has to bear it. New York, Russ, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael, this is Ross calling from the Bronx. I just gave a call to the British consulate in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And young secretary or somebody answered the phone over there, and I said, you know, I'm very disappointed and disgusted with the comments that your diplomat made about Michael Savage over the radio. She hung up the phone. Say, call it back.
All right, his name, let me say this. His name is Sir Nigel Scheinwald. He's the British ambassador to the U.S. He's headquartered in Washington, D.C. You want to do something for me? Send 10,000 emails to the British embassy in Washington, D.C. and tell them that Sir Nigel Scheinwald should apologize to Michael Savage because he smeared him. Period. End of story. That's all. I'll leave it to you. Don't get crude. Don't get vulgar. Do what you have to do. Do what you have to do in writing. Tell him that he is continuing the libel. I'm sending it to my British attorneys right now. I'll be right back. Savage. Back to the third most powerful radio show. I should say the third largest in the country. It's actually the most powerful radio show in America when you consider that Wallbanger and the Golfer basically are sort of two-note ponies. Democrats bad, Republicans good. There's nothing there. There's no there there. Everyone knows that now. They've given themselves away. But I want to move on to an article that was written today by Ellis Washington. And it is called The Savage Silence of the Lambs. It was posted on WorldNet Daily last night. You can find it on my website, michaelsavage.com. Ellis Washington asks why radio talkers haven't defended UK-targeted host. He opens by saying, I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, Voltaire. And he goes on to the French Enlightenment. And then he says, why aren't the so-called conservative media coming to the rescue of their fellow ideological colleague radio host, and conservative intellectual Dr. Michael Savage? He says it is the savage silence of the lambs. And then he says, how does the silence of the lambs apply to Michael Savage? He says Savage was justifiably outraged that his name was placed on this list, along with the names of radical Muslims who call for the overthrow of the British government, Hamas murderers, neo-Nazi skinheads, and Russian mobsters. Then he asks, where is the outrage from all the big-name conservative media giants like Fox News, Rush, Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Monica Crowley, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, O'Reilly, Cavuto, Glenn Beck, Greta, National Review, Weekly Standard, Human Events, American Enterprise Unit Institute, and the Hoover Institution? Other than one unremarkable short TV segment by O'Reilly and two excellent short stories by Brett Baier at Fox News, there is only the vexing sound of crickets chirping. With the exception of Joseph Farah's World Net Daily, I cannot cite a single media entity, think tank, or radio host in America that has dedicated themselves to preserving this vital story and keeping it alive with rigorous and trenchant analysis, he writes. It is the savage silence of the lambs. Jackie Smith's naked assault on free speech has sparked universal public outrage in England, where Savage enjoys an 80-20 favorable rating. But the deafening silence by those conservative voices in America who have built their own careers lamenting and complaining about Clinton, Obama, the liberal media, and the Democratic Party treating them badly seems akin to crocodile tears, or even worse, to the duplicitous treachery of Benedict Arnold or Judas, he writes. But why? Savage answered this question on his radio show last week, quoting the words of Martin Niemöller, the great German Protestant minister who for years suffered in Nazi concentration camps for his outspoken Christian beliefs in the face of Hitler's genocidal mania. I've read them yesterday, so I'm not going to repeat them. Niemöller was very self-critical and prophetic. In modern times, Democrats, through their majorities in Congress, have once again attempted to resurrect the unconstitutional assault on free speech called the so-called Fairness Doctrine. Obama and his fascist legions, he writes, will undoubtedly come after Rush, Hannity, O'Reilly, Ingraham, Cavuto, and Fox News in the near future. Who then will fight for them? Who will be their advocate? The GOP? Themselves? He asked, why have virtually the entire conservative and liberal media so hardened their hearts and closed their bowels of compassion against this magnificent conservative intellectual? Michael Savage, in my opinion, is a singular genius, the rival in his genre to other famous iconoclasts in world history, including Jeremiah, Elijah, Socrates, Montesquieu, Beethoven, Van Gogh, Einstein, Hannah Arendt, Churchill, General Patton, and Reagan. Yet why is he ignored at home and vilified in Great Britain for dedicating his entire life to veritas, truth? It is the savage silence of the lambs. The galling irony of Britain's Home Secretary's libelous and slanderous attacks on Savage is that this is the land where the Magna Carta was born, where the right to freedom of expression protected by international law and treaties so essential to democracies originated. For years, I wondered why the GOP, the RNC, Hannity, O'Reilly, and others in the conservative politics and media regularly invite the most reactionary, radical, liberal, Democrat, and socialist on their programs, to be fair and balanced, while for 15 years disregarding the comprehensive genius of Michael Savage by rarely or never inviting him on their shows or ignoring him summarily. Intellectuals, conservative talk radio, the GOP, and the RNC must understand that Savage's oeuvre and worldview transcends mere men, personality, politics, philosophy, and emotion, but is in the Parthenon of godliness, principle, ideas, righteousness, and veritas. He concludes, it is my prayer that conservative talk radio set aside their fears, jealousies, and silent acquiescence to the fascist blacklisting tactics of Britain and unite with Savage's righteous cause, defending freedom of speech and freedom of expression in England, in America, and throughout the world. For to do otherwise is the savage silence of the lambs. I have never met Ellis Washington, but I hope to God I can. I don't know who the man is. He's a great man. I mean, he loves me. Why shouldn't I love him? But he's also a literate man who can write well, and he also gets it exactly right. There are others who've written some good articles, but this one is more personal somehow. It rings a little closer to my heart than some that I've read. And Mr. Washington, you are welcome not only on my program, but you are welcome. Well, I don't know what to say. The next time you're in town, give me a call. We'll meet. Ellis Washington, thank you. It's on michaelsavage.com on the top left. The report from Washington. I just want to see the original article on WND for a minute, because the column may give me a little something that I'm looking for. Ah, Ellis Washington, currently a professor of law and political science at Savannah State University, former editor of the Michigan Law Review. How do you like that? And law clerk at the Rutherford Institute, is a graduate of John Marshall Law School and a lecturer and freelance writer on constitutional law. He has written over a dozen law review articles and several books, including, and they're on there. And he wrote, his latest book is The Nuremberg Trials, Last Tragedy of the Holocaust. God bless you, Ellis.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, a 15-year one-man show. It's been running 15 years, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And as you know, I have many elements in this program, and it can change on a dime as it's going to change right now. Last night, I did some soul searching. I said, why has God chosen to put me in this position that an entire nation would attack me so unfairly? I didn't have an answer. And so I looked, went back to the Holy Scriptures, my well-marked blue Bible, the Old Testament. And I read Leviticus. I said, you know, it's a funny thing I do with the Bible. I mean, I'm no biblical expert. I flip through it. And sometimes when I get in trouble, I flip to a page and see, does that work? Well, it worked last night. Let me tell you what this was. Now, many of us, we're only three generations away from a super religious personality. I don't care how atheistic you may be or how wildly disconnected you may be from the church. You're only 2 to 3 generations away from an extremely religious person who built your family. You didn't build your family. You inherited your family. The person who built it was made of much stronger stuff, I can guarantee you. And they went through much harder times than any of us are going through. And so they needed the Bible to get through hard times. They needed to believe in God and believe in you know, the right way and the wrong way, good and evil. And I flipped to Leviticus 26, and I'm going to summarize it. I can't read you every word because I said, oh my God, it really scared me. And it was about this. It said, you shall make no idols, neither shall you rear you up a graven image or a pillar, neither shall you place any figured stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. So it was about the Sabbath and bowing down to graven images. And then God says, if you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments, I will give you rains in their season, and the land shall yield up produce in the trees. You shall eat your bread. I will give you peace. You shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I will cause evil beasts to seize out of the land, and so forth and so on. And you're going to lead a great life. And he says to them, that's if you do the right thing. But in 14, it gets really bad. See, the Old Testament was fire and brimstone. It was, this is it, or is only one way. It was God's way or the highway. Let's put it to you that way. So he really wanted you to keep the Sabbath, and he didn't want you to bow down to false idols. I'll let you figure out what a false idol is. I'll let you figure out what a graven image is. I'll let you figure out what the graven images of today are. But he says, if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall reject my statutes, and if your soul abhor mine ordinances so that you will not do all my commandments, but break my covenant, this is what's coming. I also will do this unto you. I will appoint terror over you. Notice the word terror, terrorists. I will appoint terror over you, even consumption and fever, that shall make the eyes to fail and the soul to languish, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemy shall eat it. And I will set my face against you, and you shall be smitten before your enemies. They that hate you shall rule over you, and you shall flee when none pursueth you, meaning you're going to be frightened of everything. And if you will not yet for these things hearken unto me, it gets worse then. He says, if you still don't do what I want you to do, then I will chastise you 7 times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron, and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her produce, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. And then he gets even more demanding. And he says, and if you walk contrary unto me and will not hearken unto me, I will bring 7 times more plagues upon you according to your sins. And I will send the beast of the field among you, which shall rob you of your children and destroy your cattle and make you few in number. And your ways shall become desolate. Now, let me pause right there. Look at America today. America has a negative birth rate amongst the white Caucasian. So for last I checked, it's a birth rate that's below the reproduction rate, below the rate necessary to reproduce itself. Well, just take that in your thinking. Now, he goes on, and I'm going to finish up here. God says, But in spite of these things, and if in spite of these things you still are not corrected unto me, but will walk contrary to me, then will I also walk contrary unto you. And I will smite you, even I seven times for your sins. And I'll bring a sword upon you that will shall execute the vengeance of the covenant, and you shall be gathered together within your cities, and I will send the pestilence among you, and you shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy. When I break your staff of bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver your bread again by weight, and you shall eat and not be satisfied. I don't know exactly what that means about the 10 women. A biblical scholar, they probably have argued over this for thousands of years. But the last word is, you shall eat and not be satisfied. Sounds much like Western civilization, doesn't it? Rich tables, laden with rich foods, people eating and not satisfied. That is why they go to one fancy restaurant after another for the next execution of a new meal. Something new. They sprinkle a little from here and there, put it on a meal, and they still don't like it. Why? I'll let you figure it out. And then he goes on, and it gets even worse, and I'm not going to read the rest of it because it gets worse and worse and worse. He just doesn't let you go. I mean, it doesn't get better. And you shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemy shall eat you up. That's pretty frightening stuff. I mean, is it just allegory? Who knows? The random musings of olive growers who were deficient in vitamin B3. It's hard to say. I suppose that if Leviticus were alive today, Nigel Sheinwald, the British ambassador to the U.S., would ban him from Britain. Because I would think that Leviticus would be likely to inflame and cause hatred and possibly, I don't know what else. Who knows? Certainly was meant to inflame Leviticus, wasn't it? Certainly was full of hate, wasn't it, Nigel? Have you gotten yet to burning the Bibles in England? Gotten around to that yet? The people behind you might be up to that soon, a little book burning. They had it in your neighboring Saxon nation in the 30s. There's no reason you Anglos shouldn't burn your Bibles. Your Saxon friends did it in the 30s. Any book that violated the government was burned. Nigel, suppose you learned that at Balliol. These are the statutes and ordinances and laws which the Lord made between him and the children of Israel in Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses. Now, I got to repeat to you, I read this because I was trying to find some salvation somewhere. You say, well, wow, man, you're a weird guy. You found salvation in that? I can't say I did. But I found some truths in it. I mean, you know, you take it on a minor scale, there's some truths in that. Meaning you know, we're all fallen angels. I've said that to you. None of us are up to the standards of the Bible. Nobody can be. You never can hit that golden, you know, you can't be a saint. You can only be a man. You try your best. You want to do the Big Ten every day, that's a big deal. Try to make the Big Ten every day, you're a good person. I don't know how many of us can make up to the Big Ten, but at least it keeps you know where the green light is, the red light, the yellow light. Keeps you on track, doesn't it? Well, I guess all this did for me was say, you know what, Mike? Maybe you ought to really get back to a little God talk on your show and a little God talk in your head. Because you've been a little off key here lately. You know? And that's it. That's all I saw last night. God only knows what my fingers will flip to tonight in the Bible. Well, here's one from Isaiah, actually one of my favorite ones. This is specifically for the Brits. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin is Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have wrought evil unto themselves. Say ye of the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for the work of his hands shall be done to him. As for my people, a babe is their master, and women rule over them. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, Sir Nigel, that is written for you. As for my people, a babe is their master. That would be Mr. Brown. And women rule over them. That would be Jackie Smith, I suppose. Oh, my people, they that lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. Pretty interesting. England has some great cathedrals. I wonder if they actually listen to what they mumbo-jumbo in those cathedrals anymore. Or is it all kind of pomp and circumstance? What about us? What about us? We have an enemy. We have clear enemies. Iran is a clear enemy of the United States of America. They have said so. There are other nations that are clear enemies. Now, there are those who compete with us, but they're not our enemy. Not overtly. Iran is a clear enemy of America. Now Iran launches a rocket that could fly 2,200 miles on solid fuel. And what happens in America? Nothing. Neville Chamberlain Obama the other day said we're going to pursue diplomacy because we haven't pursued it. A lie. Bush pursued diplomacy for years with Iran. Tried for years to negotiate with them. Listen, I come from New York City. I know what negotiation is. I know how it works. There's several styles of negotiation. One of them is to lie to the opposition when you know that he's weak and get what you want. And constantly say, sure, yeah, whatever. What else? What do you got for me? Okay, yeah. The other way is to make believe you're negotiating while you're doing what you want anyway. There are many ways to negotiate. Apparently, Obama doesn't understand negotiation very well or who he's dealing with. As I don't think Bush understood it either. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. So Condoleezza Rice was over ahead. North Korea, they're building the nuclear towers, launching pads. We had a chance. We had a naval ship off North Korea. What did we do with North Korea? We said, don't you dare launch those rockets, Kim Jong-il. Don't you dare or else. He knew you. He knew who he was dealing with, Paper Tiger. The most powerful military on Earth, and it's not being used. So the missile cruiser is off the coast of North Korea, could have taken out his launching pads with the press of a few keys. Instead, nothing happened. And North Korea then was suddenly launching rockets into the Sea of Japan that could carry nuclear warheads as far as Los Angeles or Alaska. Nothing happened to him. So why should Iran be afraid of a man who says, we're going to negotiate with you? The very next day, sticks it in his eye and says, here, negotiate with this. And he fires a new rocket. And what does our government do? Nothing. This is like a day after the Israeli prime minister comes to America. He basically says, you know what? Stick it to all of you. I don't care. I'm not afraid of you. I know you're all quaking in your boots. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Look at Israel, the land of Golda Meir. Look what it's become. A land that was run by a tough woman. Look what it's ruled by now. People with Bloomingdale's charge accounts in New York can't wait to get on El Al and get out of their army uniforms to go spend money in a nightclub. Is any wonder? Look at, it was the land of the Bible. It isn't anymore. So God is saying to them, you're quaking in your boots and your enemy shall run a sword through you because you have ceased to follow my laws. You're no longer the land of the Jewish people. You've tried to become a nation like other nations in the Mediterranean. You were not created to become a nation like other nations. Israel was never created to be just a nation among nations. Never. Israel was created to be different than other nations. It was supposed to be a religious nation. It was supposed to try to follow the laws of the Old Testament. And when it became increasingly secular, increasingly spit in the eye of the religious in Israel, increasingly said, we don't want to be a religious nation, man. We want to be like the Greeks. We want to be like a little Greece here because we got, look, a beach, we got beaches, we got nightclubs, got pretty women, good-looking young boys with olive skin. We want to be Greeks. Can't we join you? Look, can't we all get down with each other? We're just like you. The world said, no, I don't like you anyway. No matter what you do, we don't like you because you're Jews. But instead of saying, okay, well, since we're Jews, you may as well act like them, they said, oh, well, since we're Jews, we'll act like Greeks. And so Israel has become increasingly a Hellenistic state. Increasingly Hellenistic, and the more Hellenistic it's become, the weaker it's become. And just as Athens fell, well, I'll let you finish it yourself. I'll be right back. Savage. A piece from the Bible for you, and I'm going to quote something that should be directed at Sir Nigel Sheinwald, British ambassador to the United States, who went on NPR today and smeared me, continued to blacklist me with the big lie and smears that would have made Joseph Stalin happy. It's something out of the Soviet era, continuing the big lie. Play a bit of Sheinwald.
The list, which was released the other week by our Home Office, had about 20 people on it for the last year. So you're talking about 20 out of 30 odd million. That's a very, very small number. And they're a mixture of people. I mean, they're people who are who have a background in religious extremism, others who have expressed extreme views in other ways. And I'm sorry to say that some of the things which Mr. Savage has said and which are on the record were, in the view of our government, likely to inflame and to cause hatred and possibly violence. And it's just not worth taking the risk to do that.
Well, listen, you snotty eunuch, let me tell you something. What you have done to me today is likely to cause violence against me. You have stirred up hatred amongst various groups. you have inflamed various groups against me with your big lie. So the very thing you are accusing me of, you snotty eunuch, you are doing, of course. And you see, Nigel, I don't know if you ever read the Bible at Balliol. I don't know if they still know what the Bible actually is, even though Britain was built on the Bible. There is actually a commandment which says the following, Nigel. Pay attention. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Now, the British are my neighbors. Your government has borne false witness against me. You have committed a biblical sin against me. But since we are not living in a biblical world, but a legal world, I will act accordingly. I think what I'm going to play a sounder, because I have something else for Sir Nigel. I got to get another book. Play something, any music. Ah, yes, thank you, thank you. I'm back. I had to go to my vast library. I know that I'm merely a shock jock. Just spin those records. But this mere shock jock has the complete works of Shakespeare in his radio library. And I want to read this for Mr. Nigel whatever and for the entire Labour government. It is from Shylock in The Merchant of Venice. And it goes like this. You have disgraced me and hindered me a half a million, laughed at my losses, mocked at my gains, scorned my nation, thwarted my bargains, cooled my friends, heated mine enemies. And what's his reason? I am a Jew. Hath not a Jew eyes? Hath not a Jew hands, organs, dimensions, senses, affections, passions? Fed with the same food, hurt with the same weapons, subject to the same diseases, healed by the same means, warmed and cooled by the same winter and summer as you. If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die? And if you wrong us, shall we not revenge? If we are like you in the rest, we will resemble you in that. You see how it goes? Why revenge? The villainy you teach me, I will execute, and it shall go hard, but I will better the instruction. Did you get to that at the boys' school, Sir Shinewald? You have such a distinct accent that you seem to be quite impressed with. You are impeccably dressed, but 100% incorrect, my friend. And I suggest that you, as British ambassador to the U.S., immediately send me a letter of apology saying that you are mistaken about what you have heard about me, that you certainly had an opportunity to ask me if I said those things, in what context I said them, and that by linking me up with murderers, terrorists, skinheads, Hamas executioners who smashed in a four-year-old Jewish girl's head with a rifle, you have smeared me, you have inflamed passions, you've caused hatred, and you have possibly provoked violence against Michael Savage. Send me that letter and I will not sue you. Otherwise, my friend, you better get your legal department ready. I don't care if you're the ambassador of heaven itself. I will not tolerate this behavior in my own backyard. This may work in totalitarian left-wing Britain. It does not yet work in America. This is not an opinion. You have stirred up hatred against me with false accusations, Sir Nigel Shinewald, British ambassador to the U.S. In going on NPR, my friend, you have continued the McCarthyism that was started by Jackie Smith. And you have an opportunity to correct the record. If not, well, so be it. Houston, Texas, Dane, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How are you doing, Dr. Savage? I'd just like to say that I've been listening to you for just a little bit over a year. And I got to say, when you read from Scripture, there is something that changes in you. And I think that the truth comes out even more. I mean, there's just something that happens when you do that. And I remember not too long ago.
Now, watch out now. The British are liable to classify me as a religious extremist for quoting the Bible.
And they may do for me as well, but
hey, Dane, is the Bible banned in England? Is it still permitted? Do they permit the Old Testament? I know that they covet the Quran, but do they accept the Bible, the Jewish Bible, or only the Quran is permitted?
I think it's going underground.
You mean the Jews of England will have to become Moranos in order to comply with the Labour government's New World Order?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Here are some of the things we've been talking about in the Savage Nation. The Senate said no, you can't close Guantanamo base where evil Muslim terrorists are kept. We don't want them in our backyard. Evil Muslim murderers! How could this happen? Democrats in the Senate stood up to Chairman Obama and said that you've gone too far. We're not going to have them in our backyard. Why? Because the people are rightly frightened about having radicalized Muslims in their backyard. They realize that Obama is too inexperienced and too reckless. What's amazing is that the vote was 90 to 6. You know that? 90 to 6. You won't see that on MSN LGBT. Most of the big liberals listen to their voters and refuse to let terrorists in their own backyard. Not in my backyard once again. There's the liberal for you. So who are the ones who voted that bringing Muslim fanatics, terrorists, into the U.S. would be okay? Would you like the name and shame list? Dick Durbin, Turban Durbin, said bring them into my backyard. We want Muslim terrorists in Illinois. Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat Rhode Island. Bring Islamic terrorists into my backyard. Jack Reed, Democrat Rhode Island, said Rhode Island wants Islamic terrorists. Carl Levin, the schmuck from Michigan, said we want Islamic terrorists in our backyard. Patrick Leahy, that sneaky creature, Vermont, said Vermont welcomes Islamic terrorists in Vermont. And, of course, not to be outdone, on the name and shame list is Tom Harkin, Democrat of Iowa. Bring them in. We want more Muslim terrorists in our state. Robert Byrd, Democrat, West Virginia. Huh. Ted Kennedy, once a Democrat from Massachusetts, and Jay Rockefeller, Democrat, West Virginia, did not vote on this issue. Can you believe it? But the rest of the Senate said no to Chairman O. You've heard me mention the fact that Israel's passivity has put it in very real danger. I mean, groups like Hamas are pledging to destroy Israel. Iran is getting closer to getting nuclear weapons. And it seems that the threat to Israel's survival is growing, and yet the rest of the world, of course, seems not to notice or even care. There's nothing new about that. The question is, why is Israel committing suicide? Aaron Klein has a new book out entitled The Late Great State of Israel. It's sad, but he joins us now to talk about it.
Thanks, Michael. The subtitle is How Enemies Within and Without Threaten the Jewish Nation's Survival. And my main argument is that Israel is facing unprecedented mortal danger, that it's traveling down a path, down a road, that if it's not changed, if things are not altered in a major way, there might not be a Jewish state in the near future. And you might immediately ask, because if you look at the subtitle, How Enemies Within, what am I talking about here? Am I talking about the Israeli government? Am I saying that the Israeli government is an enemy of the Jewish state? And yes, indeed, I'm arguing that in part that it's the Israeli government policies and really one folly after another that are emboldening Israel's enemies, including Iran, to the point where the Jewish state really faces unprecedented danger. Take, for example, I'm sure we all watched Israel's war against the Hamas terrorist organization. It was in December and January. And you might remember, Michael, that one of the main goals of this war was to obliterate Hamas as a fighting force and also to stop Hamas from firing rockets into the nearby Jewish population centers. Well, none of those goals were met. that, Hamas continues to exist as a major fighting force. It has the ability to fire rockets. Then, toward the end of the war, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, he was in charge at the time, he announced that one of his other goals, you might remember, was to stop Egypt from, to stop Hamas from smuggling weapons from Egypt into the Gaza Strip. And that goal, of course, fell totally short. The weapons continue to be smuggled in, as the international media is reporting. But let's just take a larger look at what Israel's failure to destroy Hamas has done. And actually, really, the opposite. What Israel has done, what Prime Minister Ehud Olmert had did, and in many ways what Benjamin Netanyahu, the new prime minister, continues to do, is emboldening Hamas and actually legitimizing Hamas. It was Israel, after its war, that started indirectly negotiating prisoner exchanges and border agreements with Hamas. And this sent messages to the international community. It sent messages even to the Obama administration, as I'm going to talk about in just a little bit, that, well, if Israel's talking to Hamas, then maybe it's okay if the rest of the world does.
Hamas is an arm of the Iranians. Aaron, are you saying Israel is strengthening Iran?
Indeed, Michael, Hamas in many ways is seen as a proxy of Iran. And one of the main things that Israel's policy has done over the last few years is strengthen Iran to the point where Tehran has now placed its proxies literally strangling the Jewish state. We have Hamas in the Gaza Strip, which is an Iranian fighting force. Then, as I talk about in the late great State of Israel as well, after Israel failed to win in 2006 against the Hezbollah militia and terrorist organization in Lebanon, if anything, as I argue, Israel not only failed to win, but it strengthened Hezbollah. Hezbollah now has more rockets and weapons facing the Jewish state that can literally target almost any point in Israel than before the war. And more than that, Israel in many ways legitimized Hezbollah and essentially fed it to the Lebanese government, where Hezbollah now literally controls the parliament of Lebanon. And this, in many ways, was an Israeli government folly. So you have Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah to Israel's north. Then you have Syria, which is in a military alliance with Iran, which has weapons and rockets that can reach the entire Jewish state, which openly hosts the governments of Hamas and of Islamic Jihad. Well, Syria was being isolated under the Bush administration, and then came Israel, came Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, and unconditionally opened negotiations with Syria. And that led the way to the United States and the international community also talking to Syria, which is a policy that we now have continued in many ways under the Obama administration. But if there's any future war, if Israel tries to target Iran's nuclear facilities in the future, Iran essentially has the ability now, in part because of Israeli government policies and follies, to wreak havoc on the Jewish state with all of its proxies that surround Israel.
Aaron, it looks like we have a major confrontation coming up between the Obama administration and Israel. What's going to happen?
Indeed, Michael, Iran is now the main point of contention between the Israeli government, now led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and the Obama administration. We have Obama, who wants talks, who wants dialogue with Iran. And actually, these talks aren't even set to begin until June, when there's a new president installed in Iran, or Ahmadinejad wins the new elections. Even though we all know that it's not the president of Iran that dictates the policies, it's the supreme leaders, it's the theocracy, it's the Ayatollahs who really control the government, and they're not up for election. And so Bibi has major decisions to make. Is he going to wait until Obama's diplomacy with Iran plays out, or is he going to target Iran, which would obviously bring about a costly war for the Jewish state? And I'll tell you, it's not just Iran where Obama's policies are threatening Israel. I document thoroughly in the late great State of Israel that Obama's overall Middle East policy, not just his talks with Iran, but also with Syria, and then in Afghanistan and Pakistan, threaten in many ways the Jewish state. And one of the major issues that I really see coming up is whether Obama is going to legitimize Hamas terrorists.
Well, are we running out of time, or is this just more scare tactics? What is this?
There are some other major themes, like how Jerusalem has already been divided. That's right, been divided, including with help from the United States. Also, how Islamic authorities are consolidating their control over the Temple Mount and literally erasing physical archaeological evidence of Jewish historic presence in that area, how the U.S. funds Palestinian terrorism, also a dangerous war that Israel is waging against a segment of its society. It's called the National Religious Camp, that wants to keep Israel as a Jewish country. This and so many other issues are dealt with. And I'll tell you, unless these issues are countered, I am warning, there might not be an Israel in the near future.
Thanks, Aaron. The survival of Israel is essential for America. Your book brings out some great points. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com, the Savage newspaper on the web. The best article that's ever come out, well, one of the best, is The Savage Silence of the Lambs by Ellis Washington that appeared today on WorldNet Daily. It's now on MichaelSavage.com. I got to tell you something. You owe it to yourself to read this article. Ellis Washington asks why radio talkers haven't defended the targeted host, Michael Savage. Now, I'm not going to read you the whole article. I want you to read it, but I'm going to read you pieces of it. He says, how does the silence of the lambs apply to Michael Savage? He says, Savage was outraged that his name was placed on a list along with the names of radical Muslims who call for the overthrow of the British government, Hamas murderers, neo-Nazi skinheads, and Russian mobsters. He asks, where is the outrage from all the big-name conservative media giants like Fox News, Rush, Hannity, Gallagher, Scarborough, Dr. Schlesinger, O'Reilly, Cavuto, Glenn Beck, Greta, National Review, Weekly Standard, Human Events, American Enterprise Institute, and the Hoover Institute. Other than one unremarkable short TV segment by O'Reilly and two excellent short stories by Brett Baier at Fox News, there is only the vexing sound of crickets chirping. With the exception of Joseph Farah's WorldNet Daily, I cannot cite a single media entity, think tank, or radio host in America that has dedicated themselves to preserving this vital story and keeping it alive with rigorous and trenchant analysis. It is the Savage Silence of the Lambs. You better read this story, and you better know who these people are, and you better understand that the conservative talkers in radio, the GOP and the RNC, are not there for me, and they won't be there for you when you need them. On the right side of MichaelSavage.com, I have a letter from England from a gentleman named Colin Bennett, who I have not met. And he says the truth about Jackie Smith. Now, Jackie Smith is the Home Secretary of England, who linked me up with murderers. Listen to what he writes. He knows it better than I do. Like most socialist women, men of the same ilk are far worse. Jackie Smith is of such low common account as to make her difficult to designate as a worthwhile enemy. She is a faceless bureaucrat straight out of Kafka's minor, ultra-minor league. Long ago, we had in Britain creatures far worse. This was the Rosa Klebb Commissar variety. See Ian Fleming's From Russia with Love. They were all built like the proverbial brick, you know what, and the slab-faced Claire Short is perhaps the last one of such. No wonder their mutilated and abused husbands are driven to either suicide, fraud, madness, or pornography. Jackie Smith could just about manage a squad of school dinner ladies. May God bless them all. A telephone answering machine would make a better government minister. These creatures come up through any and every kind of worthy committee and local debating society. Like the beloved social workers, they have little or no education and their mental level is just about zero. Overpromoted, they are just about capable of discussing the state of the roads, the height of hedgerows, and the price of clothing pegs. Their heavily communized social democratic brains are stuffed with little more than straw. For some peculiar reason, the only thing such people are strong on is gay rights. They get really disturbed about this subject, as if it were for all the world like some dream injection. If this is the face of the so-called proletarian revolution, then we have a battle on our hands worse than terrorism. There are other articles on MichaelSavage.com, including the one from Barbara Anderson when they came for Savage. From Reuters, we see that Obama's IRS is targeting the most productive members of the United States. That is trickle-up poverty. The big news, of course, and you heard it today, is that the so-called detainees, i.e. Islamic terrorists who are in Gitmo, are not coming to a backyard near you. Because once again, the liberals have shown themselves to be liars and hypocrites. Remember the statement, not in my backyard? Not in my backyard, NIMBY? Well, they're very NIMBY again. Not in my backyard. Oh, they were big on saying they were all oppressed minorities and released them and freed them until it came to freeing them into the backyards of the liberals of America. And then they screamed like stuck pigs with the swine flu. And their congressmen and senators said, uh-oh, we better listen to the people. And so today, 93-6 said, no, we're not going to release these Islamic terrorists into America's backyards right now. They overrode Chairman O. Chairman O got two blows in a row. This is a huge slap in the face to Chairman Obama. And by the way, it's long overdue because the man is frankly out of control, nationalizing Wall Street, nationalizing Detroit, nationalizing one industry after another. This is a shocking thing that's going on in the country. And what's more shocking is that he was defeated today on the detainees, even, and this is very unusual, even the FBI director, Robert Mueller, came out against him. Mueller came out against him and said, this is a bad idea. It's a shocker. This move by Senate Democrats to bar for now any transfer of, I notice they're calling them detainees. This is a very important story. Nobody will call them like it, say it like it is. What do you mean detainees? What, were they detained or drunk driving? Do you see what's going on in your country, the news speak? They won't even say Islamic terrorist. They won't say radical Islamists. They're calling them detainees, as though they were held for passing a red light, or let us say, driving under the influence. You wouldn't know what they're there for. It's unbelievable to me. It's astounding to me what's going on in the country, but it's not astounding if you read George Orwell's writings over the years. Now, George Orwell wrote 1984. Most people who have a high school education in America might know that book, 1984, where he predicted a horrible, dangerous future where the government ran everything. He wrote it well before 1984. But he created in his book, 1984, a fictional language called newspeak. And he described it as the only language in the world whose vocabulary gets smaller every year. Sounds sort of like rap music. You know, the newspeak that Orwell talks about removes all shades of meaning from language, leaving simple dichotomies such as pleasure and pain, happiness and sadness, good think and crime think. It sounds more or less like John McCain's daughter's speeches. Now, the object of newspeak was to reinforce the total dominance of the state. Slogans such as freedom is slavery will not even exist because the concept of freedom will have been abolished. The whole climate of thought will be different. In fact, there will be no thought as we understand it now. He predicted orthodoxy means not thinking, not needing to think. Orthodoxy is unconsciousness, 1984 by George Orwell. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
It looks like the Democrats in Congress are finally starting to wake up to the madness of Chairman O. By a vote of 90-6, the Senate voted to block funding to shut down the prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where some of the world's most dangerous Islamic terrorists are kept. This is an issue that Obama ran on and made a cornerstone of his campaign to the radical left lunatics. John McShane said during his failed run for the presidency, also it should be closed, which is why McShane lost. The neo-Marxists in Congress were salivating over the prospect of getting to release terrorists all over the United States of America. Obama issued an executive order declaring that Gitmo would be closed. But it seems that now the wheels have fallen off Obama's bus. It seems that these senators have come under enormous pressure from their own voters because their constituents are scared, and rightly so, that these Islamic terrorists released from Guantanamo would wind up in their own backyards. You know that one, not in my backyard, a classic liberal game. So in spite of all the far-left promises, in spite of the pressure from the anti-American ACLU, in spite of Obama's desire to make friends with the Hitler of Iran, it looks as though the U.S. Senate just can't get around the fact that the people who put them in power have risen up with a single voice and said, no, don't bring Islamic terrorists to the United States homeland. This is just the tip of the iceberg. The Democrats are also waking up to the inexperience and recklessness of Chairman O. They are standing up to the dictator at last. The media may be describing this as the first big setback for the president, but it won't be the last. Soon, even the most leftist congressman will realize that Americans don't want the government to own GM. They don't want government health care. They don't want the government to own the banks. They don't want open borders. The Democrats turned even harder to the left because they thought they could benefit from it. But if American voters show them that they will suffer if they follow Chairman O down the path to communism, they'll turn around as quick as you can say Yankee Stadium. Nancy Pelosi has been caught in a lie and now is trying to blame the CIA to make herself look good. Is anybody buying this? Joining us now to talk about this very important story is Jeffrey Kuhner.
Michael, as you and your listeners fully know, Mrs. Pelosi came out last week and publicly accused the CIA of lying to her in a September 2002 briefing. And what she has done now is she has now set the stage for a collision course between herself and the National Security Agency of the CIA. And what sources are telling me, Michael, is that Nancy Pelosi, by playing politics with the whole issue of enhanced interrogation techniques, with waterboarding, with what the Democrats are calling torture, because what she is doing, Michael, is she is accusing the Bush administration, and she is accusing key lawyers in the Office of Legal Counsel and people in the CIA of having allegedly tortured terrorists that we were holding right after the September 11 attacks. Yet, as we now know, through information that has come out not just from the CIA, but from other people that were present at that 2002 briefing, Nancy Pelosi was fully aware that waterboarding was being used, in particular on the name of someone by the name of Abu Zubaydah, a terrorist who was a senior lieutenant in Al-Qaeda, a very close ally and friend of Osama bin Laden. Somebody who not only was intimately involved in the planning and the execution of the 9/11 attacks, but even more ominously, was preparing a second wave of terrorist attacks to murder Americans in the dead of night. And as the CIA was looking to interrogate this man, they went to the Office of Legal Counsel. And they said, here are some of the enhanced interrogation techniques that we are thinking of using. Because what we have used so far, the traditional techniques, they have not worked. That in fact, Zubaydah was openly bragging to the CIA interrogators, quote unquote, I'm giving you a verbatim quote, I will kill you Americans and Jews, you don't scare me. The CIA went to the lawyers. And they said, we do not want to commit torture. We want to uphold the highest moral standards, but we have to get this kind of information out of this man to save American lives, to save American men, women, and children from certain death and destruction. And when asked by this, those lawyers in the Office of Legal Counsel said, yes, certain types of waterboarding is allowed. Sleep deprivation is allowed. What they did with these terrorists could in no way, shape, and form be constituted as torture. What they did was aggressive interrogation, effective police and law enforcement work, and it worked. This is the point that the liberals never want to touch on. He broke. They got him to spill the beans. And in the process, a massive terrorist attack was disrupted. Now, Nancy Pelosi and the liberals, in the greatest perversion I have ever seen in my life here in Washington, are now equating what we did to a terrorist butcher like Zubaydah, who respects no rule of war, who respects no element of the Geneva Conventions, that this man, that this butcher, this torturer, is now being morally equated to our men in the CIA who prevented attacks and saved the lives of innocent civilians. It is the height of liberal arrogance, of liberal relativism, and frankly, of liberal stupidity. Michael, we are slowly becoming insane. I truly believe this. And I believe that as conservatives, we have to stare reality in the face. And we have to ask ourselves this fundamental question. Can we, the world's last superpower, can we even go to war anymore with this kind of a political leadership class? Can we go to war against Islamic terrorists, butchers, mass murderers, if we are going to go in there with one arm and two legs tied behind our back? Because what is happening is very simple. Our men and women who are fighting this war on terror are being given a task that they cannot win by these effete latte-drinking liberals who all they care about is to score political points and are opportunist hacks. That if these are the people that are going to be driving this war policy, if these are the people that are going to then turn around and stab you in the back and say that you are committing torture and you can be prosecuted, you can be disbarred, you can have your career completely destroyed. You tell me, Michael, what self-respecting person is going to want to go out there and risk his or her life to save this country? We are unilaterally disarming. We are like drunken geese walking in the fog. And now Nancy Pelosi, so drunk with power, so arrogant, so full of hubris, now believes that she can challenge the CIA. Well, Michael, I have an exclusive now for the people of the Savage Nation, for all your listeners. Behind the scenes, many Democrats realize that she has made a fundamental mistake. And for years, the number two Democrat in the House of Representatives, Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader, has been plotting a coup to depose her. And the argument that he has made is that she is too incompetent, too inept, and too irresponsible to be the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives and to be the third most powerful politician in this country. And slowly but surely, Michael, you watch, he will try now to tighten the noose around her and to get her removed. And I think on this issue, Steny Hoyer is right, because fundamentally, Nancy Pelosi has disgraced herself, has disgraced her party, and more than that, Michael, she has disgraced this country. She has betrayed the men and women who are risking their lives every day, shedding their precious blood to score cheap political points and try to criminalize the Bush administration. And this is what this is about, Michael. What the Democrats are trying to do is they are trying to make George Bush and Dick Cheney and the entire war on terrorism one massive war crime. They are trying to equate us to those Al-Qaeda murderers, to those Islamic fascists. They are saying that we are a nation that tortures. We are a nation that abuses human rights. We are a nation that commits war crimes. That we essentially are a Nazi fascist militaristic state. They are undermining and delegitimizing the entire war on terror. And to do that, Michael, they want to destroy what was left of the Bush-Cheney administration. They want to criminalize them. And Michael, this is what they do in third world countries. This is what they do in Peru and in Bolivia and in Guatemala. When a new regime comes into power, they then criminalize the old regime and they demand prosecutions. What this is now about, Michael, it is about power. And it is about the Democrats cementing their power for generations to come, by making Republicans seem as if they are aiding and abetting torture. Well, I have this answer for Nancy Pelosi. You were there at that September 2002 briefing. You knew that waterboarding was being used. You knew that enhanced interrogation techniques were being used. If you had a problem with it, you should have written a letter. You should have called for an investigation. You should have complained publicly and vociferously, but you didn't. And that if you say that's torture, then you are an accomplice in torture. And if you're an accomplice in torture, you should go to prison with everybody else. And Republicans now need to stand up and say once and for all, enough is enough. We will not allow the war on terror to be criminalized. We will not allow our men and women to have a target put on their back so political hacks like Nancy Pelosi can go in there and destroy their careers. Michael, I've been in this city for a long time, and I have to tell you, I've seen a lot of low, cheap political tricks. But nothing to me has been lower or more destructive than what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are doing now. They are literally cutting the legs out from underneath us. This is treason, and I use this word very carefully. This is treason of the highest order. And what Nancy Pelosi and the Liberal Democrats have now to me shown conclusively is they do not have the courage, the integrity, and frankly, even the intelligence to lead this great country, especially in a time of peril and a time of war. And that's why, Michael, I have to tell you this. This is why I'm on this show. You have always backed the men and women in the field. You have always backed our troops, just as I have backed our troops. And this is why, Michael, I can tell you this from firsthand knowledge, because they told me this. They respect you and they admire you and they ask you to keep up the good fight. And they ask me to keep up the good fight. And that is why I'm asking all of the listeners of the Savage Nation, let us now on this issue, on the issue of defending our troops, of winning this war in Iraq and Afghanistan, of defending the dignity and the honor of all of those who serve in our intelligence agencies and who serve in our military, that we will stand up with one voice and say to Nancy Pelosi, no, you will not defame their honor. You will not defame their memory. We are right, and Nancy Pelosi is wrong.
Thanks to the report, Jeff. Finally, the rest of America is starting to see Pelosi's true colors, and they're not red, white, and blue. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Many of you are asking by email and messages to various sites, what is going on with my claim against the British government, which is in violation of European law. They're in violation of European Union laws. They're in violation of many, many different laws in, that they are signatories to. Irrespective of whether they like what I have to say, they've done an illegal act here. My attorneys in London have filed a letter of defamation, a defamation complaint. The British government has, I think, 7 to 10 days to respond. We are waiting for the response, and I will let you know what it is when it happens. Don't assume everyone in England is happy with the radical socialist Labour government. And I want to remind you that yesterday, for the first time in 300 years, a corrupt left-winger was forced out of Parliament. The Speaker of the House of Commons was forced to resign. This is the first time in 300 years. So the Labour or socialist government, it's called Labour, but it's socialist, they are ignorant, they're uneducated, and they're extremely corrupt. And the British people may be able to save themselves, finally. The only question is what the Conservatives will do when they are ushered back in. Will they be the party of Margaret Thatcher, or will they be the party of George Bush? My suspicion is they will become the party of John McCain. That is what I think you're going to see. Very little conservatism coming in England, but we'll see. Chairman O, he's only been president for a few months, and the man has been acting like a dictator. One executive order after another, one speech after another, one major emotion after another, one agenda item after another, every day another big speech with another big voice and another big show where the people don't know what he's talking about anymore. But the fact of the matter is, this was a big one. This was a big one. It was 90-6. Your local papers won't report that. That even the Democrats turned on Obama on this one. And that was because the people said resoundingly, no, we don't want Islamic terrorists in our backyard. All right, let's move on. The Waxman-Markey energy bill is reported to combat global warming, as well as to create more clean energy jobs. Well, there has to be more to this bill, because it sounds too good to be true. Well, someone who looked at this closer is Ben Lieberman from the Heritage Foundation.
Thanks, Michael. Well, the House of Representatives is currently working on the Waxman-Markey American Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009, which is a so-called cap-and-trade bill designed to combat global warming. This bill is incredibly complicated, and it's only getting worse with each day that the House debates it and changes it. But there's only two things you really need to know about it. The first is that it's a huge energy tax, and the second is that it's an ineffective solution to an overstated problem. Well, first, the energy tax part. The cap part of cap and trade means that we set a cap on emissions from fossil fuels. That's the coal, oil, and natural gas that comprises 85% of the nation's energy. Now, the only way to meet this cap is to use less energy. So the way the bill works is that the cost of energy, that's gasoline, that's electricity, that's natural gas, the cost of energy has to go up high enough so that individuals and businesses are forced to use less of it and therefore meet the energy use restrictions, which start at 3% below baseline levels in 2012 and eventually reach an 83% reduction in 2050. So we're talking about gasoline price increases eventually rising 74% and electricity prices reaching 90% more than they are right now. And it would particularly hurt coal. America is the Saudi Arabia of coal. We have massive supplies and currently use it to produce half of our electricity. But this bill would be close to a death sentence for new coal-fired electricity and therefore a death sentence for affordable electricity in the years and decades ahead. A typical household will pay over $400 more for energy in the bill in its first year of 2012, and the cost goes up from there to $1,000 per household a decade later and eventually $1,500 more per household per year. And the cost of other products also goes up since it takes energy to make just about everything, including manufactured goods and food. Overall, we estimate the average household cost of $4,800 per household per year. The overall hit to the economy is $9.6 trillion with a T, making this far and away the costliest undertaking ever. And the bill is also a jobs killer. Higher energy prices destroy jobs, especially manufacturing sector jobs. Some of these jobs are destroyed entirely, while others are outsourced to developing nations like China that have stated that they will never raise their own energy prices by imposing anything like this on themselves. The Heritage Foundation estimates 1 million lost jobs, and keep in mind these are net job losses, after the much-hyped green jobs are already taken into account. It's also a bad solution to global warming, and that's true even if you assume the worst of global warming in spite of growing evidence to the contrary. According to one estimate, this bill would reduce the Earth's future temperature by no more than 0.2 of a degree Celsius in a century's time, an amount too small to measure and too small to matter. So it's all economic pain or little or no environmental gain here. And the reason for that is simple. This Waxman-Markey bill only constrains the U.S., but a nation like China already emits more carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases than America, and its emissions are rising 6 times faster than ours. The same is true of India and other developing nations. Thus, a unilateral measure will hurt the U.S. economy, but hardly make a dent in concentrations of gases blamed for global warming. And that's, again, assuming there will be global warming, when in reality, we know that warming has stalled out for the last decade. So in sum, the Waxman-Markey global warming bill is a massive energy tax that will raise gasoline prices and electric bills, kill jobs, and especially domestic manufacturing sector jobs, and all to ineffectively address an exaggerated problem, global warming. Other than that, it's a great bill.
Amazing. Thanks for the report, Ben, and for keeping us informed. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.